Great.
So, okay.
Good afternoon. I'm calling this meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Information Technology to order. Today is March 10th. We have informational meetings from two agencies, and before I ask Mr. McSpaden to introduce the topics for us, I did want to mention to the committee and to anyone who might be listening that in addition to the informational hearings that we are conducting in a very organized pattern, marching our way through different departments of state government, Legislative Fiscal Office is also monitoring policy bills that are being heard in other committees, bills that have some significant implication for information technology. Generally, that would mean there's a big project that's being suggested, but it might mean something else. So when there is some significant or interesting aspect of a policy bill that involves information technology, Mr. McSpaden is keeping track, and he will be letting us as co-chairs know about this, and we hope to raise these issues with the co-chairs of Joint Ways and Means if we think it's something that this subcommittee would be interested in hearing more about. So in addition to marching through the departments, we're hoping that we might be able to consider some other activities suggested for the state. Mr. McSpaden.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, we have with us today two agencies, as you indicated. The first agency that'll come before us is the Oregon Youth Authority. They'll give a high-level overview of information technology in the agency. They'll also talk a bit about some of their major projects, including the juvenile justice information system. So if you could all come up. And certainly, as before you begin presenting, if each of you could introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, co-chairs Riley and Nathanson. For the record, this is Joe O'Leary. I'm the deputy director of the Oregon Youth Authority. Sitting at the table with me and who will be presenting a couple of our slides in this presentation are also Ellen Crawford, who is the Clackamas County Juvenile Department Director. Ellen is also the co-chair of the Juvenile Justice Information System Steering Committee. And to her right, I had to think about that. thanks. Is Kyriakos Kitsis, who is the Chief Information Officer for the Oregon Youth Authority. I'm going to lead off with a couple of slides that talk to you about our agency and our business. I think it's important for you to understand the business that we are in and some of our key initiatives to understand the context of how we're harnessing information technology in the Oregon Youth Authority. But it is a pleasure and a privilege to be here talking to you about some of the good work we're doing. Oregon Youth Authority's mission is really unchanged since it was created in 1995 by Senate Bill 1. And juvenile justice as a whole is kind of an odd duck. We're a little bit corrections, we're a little bit education, and we're a little bit human services. But we are, OYA at least, is a standalone agency. We partner with 36 individual county juvenile departments in every county in Oregon who run juvenile justice at the local level. And we manage what is sometimes referred to as the deep end of the pool. Youth who have committed very serious offenses or who have been managed locally by county juvenile justice and have been unsuccessful are committed to our care. Unlike the Department of Human Services, OYA doesn't go out and pick the youth that are to be placed in our legal custody. They must be placed in our custody by a court in Oregon, either a juvenile court or, in some cases, an adult court. This slide gives you a sense of our overall structure and our operating functions. And I'm going to be heavy on the context before I turn it over to Ellen and Kyriakos to talk to you about some of our individual technology projects. The two key operating functions of the Oregon Youth Authority are community services and facilities services. A lot of people think OYA, and they think that we just run juvenile facilities, close custody facilities. And actually, we have more youth who are supervised in the community than we do in facilities. Our community service division oversees 26 field offices. Those are staffed by our juvenile parole and probation officers. They also oversee 45 residential contracts. These are homes or programs in the community that house and treat young people who have been placed in OYA care and custody. And we also operate 115 foster and proctor homes around the state. That infrastructure supervises a total of about 900 youth in community settings. And significantly, the Community Service Division also oversees grants and individualized services dollars that pass through to local county juvenile departments. Our Facilities Division, our Health Services Division, and our Treatment Services Division really focus on our 10 close custody facilities around Oregon. These are 24/7 operations. We're responsible for education, health, food, treatment, recreational programming, vocational education, and a variety of community service programming. Total of 629 youth, that was at least as of January, changes every day, 629 youth currently in close custody. About half of those youth are committed to us by the juvenile court. The other half, approximately, are committed to us by the adult court because of the nature of the underlying charges. And just a little more context that will key into why our strategic priorities are so interconnected with technology services. Very, very important strategic priorities. Several of you have heard about them in other contexts. I'm just going to give you a quick overview. The first is the Youth Reformation System. Some of you heard me talk about this in the shorthand of Moneyball for juvenile justice. If you've read the book or seen the movie Moneyball, you will immediately know what I mean. We are using predictive analytics to harness the data in the juvenile justice information system to really inform decision making like has never been done in any other state, to support professional discretion, to reduce future victimization, and to maximize the use of resources. This is heavily, heavily reliant on our information infrastructure, on our technology infrastructure, both for the data itself and the software that we will use and do use to do the heavy lifting involved in crunching the numbers for predictive analytics. Our next important initiative is positive human development. This is our culture change initiative that is internal to the Youth Authority. What we are trying to do is implement a strength-based model that views youth as resources rather than victims or villains. This is consistent with the developmental approach for juvenile justice, consistent with best practices, and is heavily reliant on a lot of IS infrastructure for training and as you can imagine, for communicating among a geographically diverse system. The next point is the 10-year plan. The 10-year plan is something that the legislature in 2013 asked the Youth Authority to come back and report on. The legislature noted that our 10 facilities, our 10 close custody facilities, are in varying states of disrepair. Many of them were built at a time when the model for juvenile justice was very different than the research and best practices tell us is effective today. And we came back with a plan to basically consolidate our two Valley facilities and upgrade the remaining physical inventory of the Youth Authority to bring it in line with best practices and research. This process will be very, very reliant on the assistance of IS to be able to make sure that our designs are able to keep up with the ever-changing technology, and also just be able to make sure that our infrastructure is there for compliance with the Prison Rape Elimination Act and other surveillance security cameraing systems that we need to have in our facilities. Finally, the last bullet, the Oregon Performance Management System, or OPMS, because we like to give acronyms to just about everything. OPMS is a performance management system that we implemented several years ago. It is based on the John Bernard Business at the Speed of Now concept, which has been adopted since in several other state agencies. OIA was the first to adopt this model. This measures everything that is important to the agency to make sure that we are doing things right. We have a map that I'm not going to show you in a slide because it's pretty busy, but some of you have seen it. I can tell from your reactions. It's kind of a placemat-sized chart that shows you all of our key goals, our key operating processes, our key supporting processes, and all of the processes and outcomes that feed into those operational and supporting processes. We build scorecards and measure everything we do. And those scorecards are the focus of something that we call the quarterly target review. And to have a quarterly target review, we basically couldn't have a quarterly target review without the data that IS feeds into to populate that scorecard. And as a result, we are becoming more effective and more efficient. Here's the first of only, I think, two budget slides. This gives you the overall program structure of the Youth Authority with its attached funding amounts for the 13-15 legislative approved budget. And you can see that facilities, those 24/7 operations in facilities, is our biggest cost driver, followed by community programs. Now I'm going to lead into the information security section, which lives in the white slice of the pie that's pulled out just a little bit of program support. Just for reference, also living in program support, so you know, is our business services division, our director's office, our Office of Inclusion and Intercultural Affairs, our research office, our YRS implementation team, our performance management staff, our rules and policy, our communications office, and several statewide assessments and service charges. So the next slide pulls out and blows up that 10% and shows you that there are really two distinct IS functions in program support. One is JGIS, and that's the most expensive one, $5 million. And then right behind it at $4.3 million is the OIA-specific IT services and positions. Now, we're going to talk to you a little bit more about JGIS, and I'll say up front, it is hard to say sometimes where JGIS ends and the OIA IT support begins. This is a very intermingled function, and it's because JGIS, as Ellen will tell you about, is the primary case management system for everything we do, both everything we do at the OIA level and everything that our county partners do at the county level. If you look at this slide in terms of our overall budget right here, IS, those two sections, the $4.3 million for OIAIT and the $5 million for JGIS, constitutes only 3% of the agency-wide budget. I had to have one busy slide, and this was the busy slide. I'll make this simpler for you. In part, I just wanted you to have this for your reference in the future. There's actually a lot of data on this slide that is an overview of the Oregon juvenile justice system, and the numbers that are on this slide would not be possible if we did not have JGIS, if we didn't have the information security infrastructure that we currently do. So this gives you a map of the overall juvenile justice system, and it shows you the flow by which youth move through the system. The left-hand side is the referral, the inflow, contact with law enforcement, referral to the juvenile department. Just so you get a little bit of a scale, and these numbers are on here, but I'm just going to highlight this so that you understand the scale. There are about 390,000 youth ages 10 to 17 in 2014 in the state of Oregon. About 14,318 were referred to a juvenile court in 2014. Those numbers are in there in several of these boxes. As you move through the system, though, only about 2,500 end up being supervised, formally supervised, by a local county juvenile department, one like the one that Ellen runs in Clackamas County. And then the OYA slice of the pie gets even smaller. The youth that penetrate to the deep end of the system and end up being committed to OYA in this year were only about 630. So there are a lot of other boxes that give you an idea of the different dispositions in the system. But I wanted to show you this box, as busy as it is, to give you a sense of how important JGIS is and how all of the actors that are represented in this box our JGIS users, and how interdependent our different users are on this system. Customers, and Ellen will talk a little bit about more about the customers of JGIS, not just OYA. The OYA staff only make up about a third of the total customers of JGIS. There are about 3,000 statewide. I do want to just note that down toward the end of that list, as you see law enforcement agencies and external research partners, not all customers have the same access. Not all customers are equal. And there is a good reason that Oregon has a privilege around history and prognosis information in the juvenile justice system. That is a statutory privilege in state law. There are also a variety of federal protections around juvenile justice information. And we operate the system, as we'll talk to you a little bit more about our security protocols. External partners, though, please be assured, external partners have very limited access based on the individual youth they serve and their program needs, or in the case of our external law enforcement partners, basically only what is publicly available in any event. A little bit about governance, and this is going to be bifurcated too, because as I said, it's a little bit hard to tell where JGIS ends and the OYA IT infrastructure begins. With respect to the JGIS governance, JGIS is a creature of statute. It was created in 1995 when Senate Bill 1 was created, and the idea was we knew that youth were going to be passing between county entities and the state entity, and passing between a backbone of contracted residential treatment providers throughout the state. So the idea was one kid, one file. And someone had the foresight, or several people had the foresight, to say, if we're going to do this system, if we're going to create this kind of unified system, let's have a unified database. And there's a line in the ORS that says that the Oregon Youth Authority is assigned to be the steward and upkeeper of the system, and that all counties are required to enter data into the system. This system is governed by a governing committee called the JGIS Steering Committee. Ellen is the co-chair of that. There are five county members on that steering committee, and there are three OYA members on that steering committee. And this is a creature of administrative rule. Each county has an intergovernmental agreement that it signed with the Oregon Youth Authority, agreeing to the use and the data input requirements. The JGIS Steering Committee is responsible for a variety of protocols. You can imagine, especially, it's not so much of an issue now, but you can imagine if I take you back 20 years or so, I'm told, when this was being implemented and you had 36 different systems that all of a sudden were told, okay, you need to all be one system and you need to be able to be interoperable. There were a variety of customs and protocols and requirements that had to be worked through. We're at a point now where we've really got a lot of that locked down, and that took a lot of work over the years. And as a result, we have very well-defined, standardized protocols for access, for security, for input. We have annual user agreements that our member organizations sign and agree to. And basically, this is all under the principle of minimum necessary access to perform required job functions. We also have a JGIS security officer that is specific to JGIS that coordinates and trains local security officers, or coordinators, excuse me, from each partner agency to ensure compliance. On the other side of the screen, we've got the OYA governance over OYA IT, and this really flows. The director oversees a cabinet and executive team that's made up of our key assistant directors, and we interface as a cabinet with an IT steering committee that has overlap with our executive team and several of our IT-specific staff. This is the IT governing body that really helps flesh out what the business needs are and what kind of technologies will meet the business needs of the agency. And the last bullet there is the Oregon Youth Authority's Budget Advisory Committee that helps us align resources with our agency priorities. Next, I will show you our information services structure. A couple of numbers on this chart that I want to explain. When you see a number, that is the number of staff in a given function. When you see red, those are positions that are staffed, but for which we don't have permanent financing. So that is duct tape and baling wire, double fills, et cetera, for things that we know we have to get done, but we don't have permanent positions to do it. Four main areas that our IS serves. One is the agency-wide information security function. Distinct from what I just mentioned, there's a JGIS-specific information security. This one's different. This is over the entire OYA agency. It's electronic as well as paper information security. The next is application development. These are our software developers who help us write the code that makes this, particularly the JGIS system, keep functioning. And actually, one of our the manager of that system wanted to be here today, but we do twice annual releases, and our release is due this week. And these folks do a whole lot of work to keep the trains moving. The next area of focus in our IT infrastructure is the JGIS business integration function. These are the folks that oversee the training for JGIS users. They process change requests to the system, and they help us process the automation that the system allows us to do. And then finally, our technical services division. These are the folks that deal with our hardware and help us deal with our hardware, our network infrastructure, our service desk, our servers, our desktops. I am told that the standard best practice in public agencies is to have about a 5% ratio IT staff to, IT at least funded to your agency budget. We're at about 3%. Wanted to call that out, and wanted to call out again those red non-permanently financed positions. In the not too recent past, the 09-11 biennium, OYA lost three IS positions, and then in the 2012 emergency board, we lost one more. So this is a division of this agency that is an unintentional bottleneck to things that we want to get done, but for the resources they have, they're making the best of it and moving us forward. So here are, I think this one is my last slide before I turn it over to Ellen. These are some of the things that we've got going on right now. These are our major system initiatives. I've talked a lot about JGIS, so I'm not going to talk anymore. I want to really call out our implementation of our electronic health records. Dr. Adams is in the room, I think. She was sitting closest to the door, which I told her did not at all erode my confidence. Way in the back, by the door, fine. Dr. Adams, in partnership with our IS staff, is to be given a lot of credit for the shepherding the implementation of electronic health records in OIA close custody facilities. We began that implementation in 2014, and it was completed in January of 15. Obviously, the benefits of electronic health records, ease of information sharing, the elimination of paper files, and this continuity of care between our facilities. So when youth transfer from facility to facility, and when youth come to us from the community or leave our care and go back into the community, the application and system that we are using, EPIC, is the application. We were able to get it at a very low cost through membership in the Oregon Community Health Information Network. That's OCHIN. And this is the system that I'm told most of the major hospital systems and community health systems in Oregon are using. We're already seeing the ease of use in our system already. And this was about a $325,000 startup cost. And we anticipate it to cost us about $83,000 annually once we get the dental interface in. The dental part is still to come. We operate a ton of electronic interfaces with other state agencies and other federal agencies to be able to keep track of child support, federal benefits for our youth. As you can imagine, I didn't show you the demographics, but a lot of our youth, they've been dealt a really tough hand. They've got medical issues. They've got mental health issues. Many are on SSI, Social Security Disability. And we need various interfaces with different state agencies to keep an eye on that stuff and keep that managed well. We manage youth trust accounts through the Department of Treasury. And an important one up there, VINE is the acronym. Don't tell me what it stands for, but it's the victim notification system so that victims of crimes who wish to opt in may register so that any moves of the individuals convicted of those crimes, they receive notice of. And under the other category, I do want to call out the AIM, Administrative Investigation Management system. This is the system used by our Office of Professional Standards. It's our internal affairs department. We run a 24/7 hotline for youth and staff and community members to call to alert us to any certainly any illegal or unethical or risky conduct in our facilities or with respect to anyone that comes in contact with youth in our care. We field about 100 complaints a month through that system, and that system gives us the ability to record and track and monitor, much like what I told you about our performance management system. This helps us populate many of our metrics to let us know how we're doing and whether we're doing things right. About 945 computers, 121 servers, and 69 digital video recorders for our surveillance systems in close custody are embedded in one of those bullets down there too. So that's kind of the overview and the context. And before I turn it over,
that's right,
Co-Chair Nathanson.
Yes, please. Thank you. I have a question for you on the topic of a way for people to submit a complaint, inquiry, allegation.
Yes.
Are we talking about picking up the phone and making a telephone call?
Co-Chair Nathanson, yes.
So in the Human Services Subcommittee, occasionally we will hear about complaint lines that are hosted by either, in the General Government Subcommittee, we hear about one sort of a hotline hosted by a Secretary of State's office, I believe it is.
Yes.
But also in human services, we will hear about something that might be hosted by either an advocacy organization for foster youth,
yes,
or something available through the governor's office.
Yes.
Are there sometimes calls made to the governor's office or 211,
yes,
or one of these other lines, and they eventually make their way to yours? How if someone's got a concern,
yeah,
might be time sensitive.
Yes.
How did they know to call your line, and what happens if they call one of the others instead?
Great question, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the subcommittee. There are a variety, as you said, my answer is all of the above, a variety of ways that concerns, complaints can be lodged. The hotline that I mentioned is not operated by IS. That's actually operated by our professional standards office. So we staff that. We listen to those every day. We prioritize and triage the ones that need immediate attention. So I want to put you at ease on that. That is not to say, though, that we don't receive inquiries from all of those other entities that you mentioned. We have signage in all of our institutions and in all of our field offices, and our probation officers, our juvenile parole and probation officers, and our direct care staff remind youth that there are a variety of ways for them to lodge concerns, and for that matter, stakeholders too. It doesn't, their complaints don't just come from youth. So in my experience now, 2.5 years as the deputy director, I've seen them come in every single way. They've come in through the Secretary of State. They've given us a heads up. They've come in through the governor's office and a call from the governor's office. They've come in through our hotline. Some of them are duplicative. But we do, I think we do a very good job. And this, the software that we use, every time we get one from one of these other entities, we ping our professional standards office so that it's entered in this database. So we have a, you know, if it's come to us, it ought to be in that database.
Great. That closes the loop for me, the information that you've just provided. I wanted to be assured, and you have assured me now, that it doesn't matter where it came from. It's recorded and it can be tracked.
Yep.
A problem can be addressed. I also don't want something to be counted two or three times if it's only one instance, and you will take care of that. I don't want us to get too far into, or really at all, into policy. This is more about how do we use systems to receive information, track, and manage, and so forth. So thank you.
Thank you. If there are no other questions at the moment, I will turn it over to Ellen to talk to you a little bit more about the purposes and functions of JGIS.
Thank you, Joan. Co-Chair Nathanson and members of the subcommittee, in addition to being the director of Clackamas County Juvenile Department, as Joe stated, I'm also the co-chair of the JGIS Steering Committee. And I wanted to take just an opportunity today to talk to you about the core functions of JGIS as well as the services it offers to a multitude of partners. JGIS really is a foundational data system for Oregon's juvenile justice system. It's a unique system. It's integrated in terms of all the partners that utilize the system. Thank you.
Sure.
The mission of the JGIS system really is to provide a comprehensive view of the information about youth offenders across the state of Oregon as well as with every county juvenile department. It also provides comprehensive support for managing individual offender cases, provides case management services across the continuum of care, and tracks juveniles through the juvenile justice process. It provides capacity for and aids in overall training of our juvenile justice professionals. It also provides for the planning, development, and evaluation of different programs that we use for the juvenile youth offenders. Most importantly, too, it also recognizes and supports all of the business needs that the county juvenile departments have, as well as Oregon Youth Authority, and the need for partnerships and collaboration among our system. As Joe stated, we work with very difficult young offenders and families. It's critical that there's consistency when they move from one system to another, and this system really allows that to happen. As mentioned previously, all 36 counties have entered into an intergovernmental agreement with Oregon Youth Authority in order to utilize the JGIS system. I want to point out to you what all counties have committed to, because as mentioned earlier, that's a small feat in and of itself, to have a commitment from all 36 counties to commit to and provide the same consistent reporting requirements in this data system. All counties committed to provide and maintain all the operating software and the updates needed. They've been responsible for all the costs associated with upgrading computer systems as the JGIS revisions come out. They've been also responsible for all the costs associated with training. As Joe mentioned, JGIS has a regular training schedule when releases are coming out. We also have security coordinators in all of our sites to make sure confidentiality is secure and maintained throughout the system. But most importantly, all the counties originally committed to use the Juvenile Justice Information System as their primary juvenile justice database and case management system. And that's critical and unique within the state of Oregon. This has resulted in a statewide data repository for all youth in the juvenile justice system in the state. It's also resulted in data mining resource for research and for decision-making tools, and really has created a system of transparency. It's increased our collaboration among system partners, our ability to communicate and partner with each other, and really become a more efficient system. Thank you. I wanted to talk briefly about the information services that JGIS also provides, which really is a wide variety and range of services. As Joe mentioned, tomorrow is one of our JGIS releases. That happens twice a year. It's really unique in that it prioritizes different business priorities of agency partners, new initiatives. It helps incorporate statutes and really best practices that agencies are implementing. The JGIS data is also a foundation of the Oregon Youth Authority's Youth Reformation System. This system has, because of JGIS, has been able to look, develop research-based tools leveraged by the data entered into the JGIS system, and this data is entered both by OYA and all of the county juvenile departments. It's been able to produce risk assessment scores, typologies, and other predictive tools that we're using in our decision-making process. Clackamas County, along with Linn County, have been the two pilot counties to implement the Youth Reformation System and some of the tools that have been produced as a result of it. It has improved our decision making in regards to youth offenders, as well as the most appropriate placements that youth will have the best success at. And so this has been a really good integration into the juvenile department's programs in terms of planning for youth. Oregon statutes also require periodic audits of the juvenile justice system, including county juvenile departments. The data in JGIS has been used on at least three separate audits in the past. Audits have just now been reinitiated, and the JGIS data will be very key in providing critical functions and outcomes that we've been producing over the years. Another critical service of JGIS is standardized tracking of data completed by county juvenile departments and OIA. This enables Oregon Youth Authority to publish annual reports and statistics on recidivism, on referral types, on disposition, on detention utilization, restitution, community service, and I could go on and on. It's a mine of data that you can pull and evaluate program effectiveness. The data from JGIS is also used for compliance reasons with some of the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention mandates. This has to do with mandates regarding sight and sound separation, deinstitutionalization of status offenders, disproportionate minority contact, and jail and lockup removal. We mentioned some of the external partners that have utilized JGIS, and JGIS has been used on a national level as well for some research. The National Council on Crime and Delinquency utilized data from the Juvenile Crime Prevention Risk Assessment, and this is a tool in JGIS that is utilized by all the county juvenile departments that really look at what is the risk profile of our youth offenders, and these tools have been evaluated on a national level using this data in JGIS. Another example of national research is through the John Hopkins University, and they're looking at a national study on the impact of sex offender registration and notification laws, and invited Oregon to participate. And although Oregon was one of the last states invited, it was the first state to be able to provide data because of the JGIS system. So Oregon's reputation has really become well known for its robust data and its ability to expand. And so I know that we're pressed for time. I would be happy to answer any questions before I turn it over.
Thank you.
Okay. I would like to introduce Kyriakos Kitsis from Oregon Youth Authority.
Thanks, Alex. Co-chairs and subcommittee members. For the record, my name is Kyriakos Kitsis. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Oregon Youth Authority. IS implemented, has implemented several enhancements to the JAGES application. The youth, youth reformation system tools, YRS tools, that both Joe and Ellen just referenced. Positive youth engagement tracking, which provided the ability to track the hours of youth participation and achievement in education, vocational training, and work experience. External document sharing provided the ability to import and share PDF copies of important documents such as police reports, youth psychological evaluations, court documents, and birth certificates. The entire agency's JPPO, which is the Juvenile Parole and Probation Officers, computers were replaced with laptops with direct access to OWISE network. As Joe has mentioned, we have implemented the EPIC electronic health record system, and IT provided project management oversight, technical support, and connectivity with EPIC, facilitated end-user training, and built an interface by which we send youth demographic information from JHS to EPIC for the purpose of identifying the youth that are already in the system and for registering new patients. Systems interface enhancements. We migrated legacy interfaces from COBOL to Oracle stored procedures to leverage sustainability and efficiencies for these core business systems. Examples of the interfaces include the child support referrals to the Department of Justice and youth eligibility and demographic information to OHA so medical cards can be issued. We made some technical infrastructure upgrades. Electronic wide area network. We leveraged nearly $1 million in a federal subsidy to expand our network speed and performance, enabling improved video conferencing capabilities, reducing the need for travel, and improving JAGES speed. Computer technology refresh. Completed phase one of computer replacement cycle of for half of the agency's computers. The agency's intention is to refresh 50% of all equipment each biennium, which allows for a four-year replacement cycle that is in line with industry standards. Today, 363 PCs have been replaced. Facility surveillance systems upgrade. It is currently 50% complete. These new systems will enable the agency to implement federal standards related to PREA, the Prison Rape Elimination Act, and will reduce the possibility, the possibility of sexual abuse and harassment in our facilities. Thank you. So, information systems is focusing on three key initiatives for the next biennium that support the agency's strategic priorities of moving forward with the youth reformation system, positive human development, and the 10-year facilities plan. First, we're in the concept origination phase of the project to modernize JAGES, and we will be working on requirements and scope. We are also working with OIA Business Services on the 10-year plan to help identify where IT systems will be placed throughout buildings that will be remodeled. We will also complete the remaining 50% of the surveillance systems upgrade. Finally, the business case for our data warehouse has been approved by the state CIO, and we're in procurement for our software tool.
So that is our presentation, members of the subcommittee. We have no IT-related budget asks in this cycle for the governor's proposed budget. If there are any questions, happy to answer now or offline.
I don't see. Oh, Senator Thatcher.
It just occurred to me, and this is really just for my own curiosity. It sounds like you have a lot of data. You collect a lot of data. Plus, you have a lot of surveillance. Do you utilize the state data system for storing any of that?
Co-chairs Nathanson and Riley, Senator Thatcher, we actually do the data that is input into JAGIS is stored on the state data centers. Servers, is that the term?
That is correct.
Oh, good. Servers.
You got it, Joe.
Thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you. And with no specific requests coming to us, just go forth and do good stuff, right?
Keep trying.
Thank you. Thank you all.
So, co-chairs, members of the committee, next up we have the Department of Corrections. Again, they'll give an information technology overview of the department and then talk a bit about some of their projects. When you come up to the table prior to presenting, if you could introduce yourself for the record, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, co-chairs Nathanson, co-chair Riley, members of the subcommittee. Thank you for allowing us to present today. I'm Daryl Borello, the Assistant Director for General Services for the Oregon Department of Corrections. I have had the pleasure of being in that position for 7 whole days now. So I'm trying to grasp a hold of all this, and I brought my newly found best friend, who's the CIO, Bettina Davis, with me to assist me today. So we're going to give you a presentation overview of our ITS section and answer any questions that you might have. First, just a broad overview of the agency, the mission of the agency is to promote public safety by holding offenders accountable for their actions and reducing the risk of future criminal behavior. DOC has recently adopted a new shared vision. This mission, vision, and values are what drives our everyday business, and we have listed those here for you. I won't, for the sake of time, go through each of those. This organization chart provides a high-level overview of the Department of Corrections. Our team is made up of approximately 4,500 employees. And as you see, information technology falls under the General Services Division. This slide shows the General Services Division's share of the agency's total budget. The chart on the left is total funds, and the chart on the right is general funds. As you can see, out of the general fund dollars, the IT or the general services section is pulled out, comprising approximately $57.4 million. And then the other funds is the pie chart on the left. The largest expenses in the IT is the services and supplies, and other than personnel, and that is mainly for the licensing of our computers and Microsoft licenses and such. The next slide breaks down into the actual IT budget. If you look at the slide on the left, that is the ITS to General Services budget within our division. The slide on the right is the ITS to the DOC budget as a whole. What I will point out there is that if you look at the agency budget as a whole, our ITS section makes up less than 3% of that. And as mentioned earlier, the standard for that is hovering right around 5%. Most of that, again, is in personal services, followed up by services and supplies, and then capital outlay. The IT services mission is to provide high-quality information services and systems that support accomplishment of the department's goals and objectives. Our employees focus on customer service. They support the Department of Corrections mission and engage in our stakeholders in developing positive solutions as trusted advisors. IT accomplishments and future initiatives align with the department's strategic mission. And DOC is currently chairing the Public Safety Shared Resources Team, which was created to explore areas of shared service specifically in IT. The IT organizational chart, as you'll see, there are three main areas within the IT section of the Department of Corrections: business services and support operations, technical services, and application development and maintenance. There are currently 80.5 FTE positions within IT, and the CIO, as well as the application development and maintenance manager, report directly to the Assistant Director of General Services. Services are critical because you, as you
I'm
know.
I'm going to interrupt for just a second. Can you go to the previous slide? How many people did you say there are in IT?
80.5 FTE, co-chair.
I'm curious, and I should have asked mm-hmm. the previous presenter this same question. How often, if ever, do the people in your IT section talk with IT people in other agencies or the state CIO to just bounce ideas off of, you know, best practices? How do you handle this kind of a situation? What's, you know, what's a different way of doing this and doing it better? Or do you really try to develop a complete package of expertise within your own agency so that you don't have to kick around ideas with others?
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, both is true. So at the time where we do have in-house experts, subject matter experts on that area, we often contact IT shops from other agencies and we'll enter into conversations with them on best practices, find out what they've done in the past, what they're planning to do in the future, what's worked and what has not worked.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you.
And Joe is nodding back in the back as well.
Thank you. For the record, thank you.
Wrong one.
Yeah, two more. Yep. All right. Services are critical in our agency, like so many others. And as you know, we operate a 24/7, 365 days a year operation. And so it's imperative that our systems stay up and running, that we have available to our staff support at all times. So I wanted to go over a little bit of what the IT shop offers internally. We do staff a help desk, which enables staff to either email or call in and get IT support. We work in partnership with the Enterprise Technology Services. They host our staff Windows-based server and our IBM mid-range environment. We've also partnered with OUS for our video and audio conferencing, and also with Xerox for DOC's consolidated printer project, and that was very, very successful. Okay, let's move on. In their DOC application services, governance is provided through Service Request Governance Committee and through our policy group, and let me explain the difference. The Service Request Governance Committee is a committee within DOC that's made up of basically our customers. They are brought, service requests are brought forward to them for IT services and projects, and then they vote on those projects and they prioritize those projects, knowing the business needs, knowing what needs to be done. They are not made up of IT folks. These are the customers within our agency. The policy group governance committee is for those major service requests, those requests that require over 250 hours to complete. Those go through our policy group, which is our equivalent of an executive cabinet. They prioritize those according to the needs of the agency. And then we as ITS provide that policy group on a monthly basis with our 10 largest projects at the time and give status updates to them monthly. Another difference is if it goes to a major service project over 250 hours, then we also assign that an IT project manager to help track and keep that on track. Primary support services. This is our hardware and software problem resolution, email administration throughout the agency, our mobile devices, the other things listed here on the slide. ITS works closely with our business customers to support the inmate population. We support our inmate systems that I'll talk about later, as well as the audio and video conferencings. Like I said, we also support the staff's use of mobile technology such as iPads, Windows-based tablets, smartphones, and cell phones. Our core information systems is our offender management system. That's consisted of our CIS, the Corrections Information System, and our OMS, our offender management system. Our offender support services, which is our canteen, our trust. We refer that to that as our tag system. That is basically what tracks our inmate trust accounts. Our AFAMUS, which is our budgeting system, and the Human Resources Information System, which I will refer to a little bit later. The offender management system is also contributes to our sentencing, our security threat management database and tracking, case management. The inmate system tracks the reentries. It tracks our legal libraries and some of our education for inmates that I will discuss in a little bit later. These systems are utilized by DOC employees, county corrections, parole and probation officers from all 36 counties, inmates, and agency partners. And again, they have to be up and running for a 365-day, 24/7 operation. So now I'd like to take a breath and slow down just a little bit. I was trying to get through that overview and into kind of our what we've been working on. So our 2013-2015 IT projects, we completed and are still working on in this biennium approximately 20 service requests. Those have been collaborating with other public safety agencies for shared IT resources. We're working under that shared resource model with the parole board in rewriting their PBMIS. The offender property control application development, which it's our hopes that that will be of good cost savings to us from the avoidance of tort claims over inmate property. The installation of the GED testing system for inmates, the human resource information application, which consists of 9 different modules tracking anything from administrative investigations to grievances, arbitrations, etc. And the NSPID, which is our ID card system for non-employee service providers. This is in part a part of the PREA requirements, as we had to develop a system to track the identifications, the incomings, the outgoings of all non-employee service providers, all the way down to like the Pepsi vendor that would come in and fill the vending machines. And so that's what that database is for.
I'm going to let you catch your breath for a minute while I ask a question. Are you developing that system in-house? And the reason I'm asking is I know that there are private providers with commercially available products that handle that sort of thing.
Co-Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, we are developing that ourselves. I would have to get back to you on the specific reasons for that. Okay.
Yeah, I would like to know.
Absolutely.
Sometimes we find that we have had to use a tremendous amount of our own resources to figure something out, and then maintaining it over the years becomes more difficult. And just curious how you came to that conclusion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can say that it was a modification and an add-on from our other system that tracks employees, but to get you a very accurate answer, I'll get back to you.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you. And then the support of the Xerox rollout project. Okay, the next one. The 2015-2017 upcoming IT projects, strategic initiatives that were included in the governor's balanced budget were the electronic health records system, the business analysis for our CIS replacement, and the inmate thin client network replacement. And I would like to go into each of those in more detail. Our health records section currently relies on paper-based medical records combined with an outdated mainframe solution that no longer supports effective decision-making or the efficient delivery of quality health care. In 2014, Senate Bill 843, the Correctional Health Care Cost Work Group, included the use of electronic health record systems as one of its primary recommendations to the legislature. This came after the work group reviewed nationwide efforts to increase efficiencies and prioritized recommendations based on project impact. DOC has contracted with a consulting firm that specializes in electronic healthcare record systems for correctional environments to assist us engaging DOC staff in creating deliverables on that. So we're on the infancy stages of looking at what that system might look like. Currently, that system is in the RFP phase for a project manager.
Question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With your electronic health record system, are you actually planning on building a system of your own, or you're going to buy something off the shelf? Because it would certainly seem that that's been done before.
Yeah. Senator Whitsitt, co-chairs and members of the committee, we're in the process of actually trying to evaluate that and see what would be the best route to go. We have the RFP in for a project manager that would come in and look at those various options.
Follow up. Has the Department of Corrections actually checked with the Department of Administrative Services to see what type of services they might have to rather than contracting out?
So for the record, this is Bettina Davis.
Sorry?
For the record, this is Bettina Davis, CIO for DOC. So this is a project that is actually going through the stage gate process, and we are preparing our business case in IRR, which this consulting firm helped us to develop for submission to the stage gate process. And in that business case, the department is leaning towards an alternative as a software as a service solution.
Mr. McSpadden, could you please provide any additional information how this may relate to everything we heard from the state CIO's office earlier this session?
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Senator Whitsitt, yes, the state CIO and the Legislative Fiscal Office have jointly agreed to a stage gate review process in the early stages, which is typically right about now. Agencies that are proposing a budget request need to present high-level business case information, a high-level plan, et cetera, so that a decision can be made about whether or not additional resources ought to be brought to the project so that they can firm up their plans, firm up their business case, and be at a point where the true costs of the solution, the plans for managing the solution, the acquisition and implementation can actually be better known, and we can have a better level of certainty that the appropriate amount of due diligence has been done by the agency. Typically speaking, for very large information technology projects, we do advise agencies to hire an outside project manager that has done these kinds of projects before, so that the agency isn't left trying to do something for the first time, having another duty as assigned with very limited staff, et cetera. And so the department is following a standard path that both LFO and the state CEO's office has recommended.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next slide. The next project is our CIS analysis. This also, a business case has been submitted, and we are actually preparing for that first phase of stage gate also. The correction information system is essential to the department's ability to promote public safety. This system houses our offender management, our case management, and our sentence management systems. The information within these systems is shared with various stakeholders, community correction, parole and probation from all 36 counties, LEDS, Department of Justice, and other external stakeholders. The existing COBOL technology does not allow for modern data sharing methods that provide on-demand access to this type of information and to our DOC customers. And so we are now in the analyzing stages of that. In that phase one of looking at the CIS system, we are completing the DAS required IT stage gate oversight documentation. We're conducting an as-is and to-be business process documentation, a gap analysis, research feasibility of market offerings for replacement that will match our business needs, and we're developing the RFP to be ready for release when that's ready to go. So the third system is our inmate thin client replacement system. This is not a new system. This is not an additional ask. This is a hardware refreshment system for an old system that we're operating. DOC has established an inmate client network to provide education, law library services to adults in custody. These services are provided by mandate from ORS and OAR. DOC IT services maintains, monitors, and repairs the critical system infrastructure, which right now for this system is at high risk of failure due to aging hardware. This system has outgrown its existing hardware, and therefore we often experience lag time, timeouts, and occasionally we cannot upgrade the system because of incompatibility issues. This system upgrade will also be completed by existing DOC resources and a project manager from our IT shop.
I'm going to ask something here just because there's some words on that slide that interest me. Whenever education or library appears on a slide, I've got a couple extra questions. Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like even though you're treating it as an upgrade, first of all, is it possible that when an analyst reviews this with you, it might be that a replacement of some sort is more cost-effective than an upgrade, given the age of the system?
Do I have to introduce myself or just answer? It might be possible, yes.
as you are reviewing possibilities for how you could provide services, educational and law library materials, mm-hmm. will you be having sort of exploratory discussions with either the state library or the state law library to be able to hook into systems that they might be able to provide mm-hmm. you with services?
The department has had and is having ongoing discussions on what other Department of Corrections in the nations are doing in providing these services. And so we will be looking towards, while the cost is really just for the hardware upgrade, if we can do something better to serve our inmates better through for our educational customers and maybe go towards web-based law library services.
Thank you.
The 2015-2017 IT projects that are not part of a POP package that DOC plans to do within its own resources is a PREA software enhancement, the payroll document imaging system, and our systems that have been identified through our core breakthrough initiatives as the DOC intranet data cleanup and governance and a correctional case management upgrade that we're referring as CCM 2.0. And I'll briefly cover each of these. In the PREA software enhancements, the Department of Corrections has secured a $500,000 grant from the U.S. Department of Justice. That grant program is being referred to as Breaking the Silence Project for DOC. This grant would benefit all 14 institutions within the Department of Corrections, and it will enable us to better track, investigate, and identify those inmates that have a likelihood of engaging or in becoming a victim or a perpetrator of sexual abuse or sexual harassment while they're incarcerated within the Department of Corrections. The payroll document imaging system. The DOC payroll unit currently processes almost 10,000 pieces of paper a month associated with payroll. They currently have over 60 five-drawer filing cabinets full of payroll records. And so this system would allow them to scan and archive those in. We are currently working and looking at shared services with the Oregon Secretary of State to use the Oregon Records Management solution for this. And this would be absorbed by DOC General Fund. The next is our core breakthrough initiatives of a DOC intranet. This project is for DOC to develop and deploy an enterprise-wide intranet for improving business processes related to communications within the agency. DOC has engaged the Markham Group to complete a strategic planning infrastructure assessment of this project by facilitating conversations with DOC key stakeholders to understand which business objectives can be best matched to SharePoint features. And this assessment was made at no cost to us through the utilization of Microsoft Enterprise Licensing Planning credits.
What does that mean? What are these credits and how can we get more?
Yeah, we need a lot of them.
Was that a question? So when you
seriously, it sounds good, but I don't know what it is.
So when you engage in a Microsoft Enterprise license, Microsoft will give you a certain amount of training credits and a certain amount of planning credits so that you can engage Microsoft preferred providers that can help you plan an effort. So that's what we did with the Markham Group.
Sounds like it's buying customer service along with a product.
Right.
Thank you.
The data integrity and governance, as we our agency moves more towards core evidence-based practices, we have been inputting data into data warehouses. That data has not always been governed, and we're having data issues on the reliability of some of those. And so this data integrity and governance breakthrough would clean up that data, enabling us to use that for research and analysis as we move forward with our core measures. And finally, the CCM2, Corrections Case Management. Corrections Case Management was a strategic initiative in 2005-2007 biennium, CCM is about prioritizing services towards inmates who are at high risk to recidivate. It emphasizes that the management of inmates is a collective responsibility, and now that CCM has evolved through this initiative, CCM 2.0 will embark on a review of those current processes and practices to ensure that the resources are being maximized by targeting those inmates who are most likely to recidivate. This project will also be managed by a core project manager, and they will have access to an ITS project manager as a technical liaison. And that concludes our presentation. Thank you for your interest, and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Senator Whitson.
I actually have a question for Mr. McSpadden. Mm-hmm. Let's take the Department of Corrections, Oregon Health Authority, Department of Human Services, ODOT, are roughly the same size, 4,000 employees, plus or minus. What kind of conditions are their computing and software situations in as agencies? Are they similar to this agency as being pretty archaic and the old COBOL system and so forth? And to what extent could this similar computing power and software be designed for all these big agencies with specific tweaks for corrections or for healthcare or for, you understand what I'm saying?
So co-chairs, members of the committee, Senator Whitsitt, I'll do my best on your second question, but let me start with the first one. So the Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority, I'll take them combined, they're the largest combined agency in state government, have the majority of the IT staff. There are about 1,924 IT classified staff across, I want to say, 47 agencies, and DHS and OHA has about 400. That gives you a little bit of an indicator in terms of scale. This agency has 80.5. Mm-hmm. I think OIA has about 20 IT staff or so. Their systems, I believe at one time, Department of Corrections and Youth Authority were actually part of the Department of Human Services. And so many of their systems actually were built all at that time. So there are a number of core systems in each of these agencies that are certainly older than my children. Maybe were put in place just a bit after I was born. I'm in my mid-40s. So some of these systems are very old, and they're based on COBOL. Many of the agencies have been trying for many years to replace them. For a variety of reasons, haven't been able to do that, and so they've tried to extend them over time. Certainly, one of the efforts that the state chief information officer is responsible for, needs resources to accomplish, is statewide standards for application development, for tool sets that are used. Certainly, one initial step is this stage gate review process to make sure that agencies are going through a consistent process of evaluating the options that are available. And more so in the private sector, there are commercially available systems that are a better alternative, whether they're housed internally or whether they're offered, and I'll use air quotes, in the cloud or as a software as a service offering. So there are better alternatives for these agencies, less expensive alternatives for these agencies, but still, as resources are allocated one agency at a time, have been for quite some time. Coordination is needed, standards are needed, and that's the role of the Office of the State CIO.
Now, of course, COBOL didn't exist in the 40s, but it didn't exist until late 60s, early 70s. Mm-hmm. But you're close, only 30 years off. That's all right.
Senator Riley, I was referring to my age. I'm in my mid-40s,
okay, I see.
And so I was born in 1968. So
very close. So
that's
very
the,
close.
That's the year I graduated from vet school. Jay said.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if you addressed the second part of that question, and that is to what extent could since they're all the same agencies, they do different things, but the core systems are very similar. Why are we creating a new system for each agency as opposed to creating a new system for big agencies and then tweaking them to make them fit?
So co-chairs, members of the committee, Senator Whitsitt, again, you've heard from two agencies today about the electronic health record. The Department of Human Services and Health Authority also have a need for a health record. The same similar approaches are available to them. Each of them do have slightly unique needs, may not always come to the same determination, but right now the agencies are making individual choices.
I gather there's no impetus to make a, and I don't even know if it's a possible thing to do, but to create a mainframe, if you will, that fits an agency of certain size and then tweak it from there instead of building each one individually.
Well, in fact, there is that initiative, and the state CIO is going about that right now, looking at those systems that could be spread across the entire state agencies, some like payroll and the email systems, any of these that could be used across. The state CIO is already going through that process right now, and mm-hmm. it's kind of well into it, but there's a long way to go.
Senator Riley, members of the committee, as Senator Riley indicated, the state CIO is working on that now. In fact, we'll come back to this committee on March 19th to talk a bit about an effort that was actually required as part of a 2014 budget note to do a comprehensive IT asset inventory, provide a report that begins to get at what systems are deployed, how old are they, are they serving current needs? When do they need to be replaced? I think that'll be a continuous effort, but the state CIO should be able to talk about that issue on the 19th when it comes back.
Additional questions? Thank you for being here, both agencies. There's no other business before our committee today. I'm closing the informational hearing.
Yeah, Chuck, have a seat.
Informational hearing.
Yeah, Chuck, have a seat.
Today. I'm closing the information.